Well, with the first weekend of Sundance behind us and last week's snow, in the studio with us with an update, Summit County Sheriff Justin Martinez. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So we saw a lot of snow recently, dozens and dozens of slide-offs, minor fender benders. Tell us, what should people do when they slide off the road in a snowstorm like that?
Well, obviously, stay as safe as possible. And when it comes to tow trucks and accident reports, the way that the state statute's written, it says that there has to be $1,500 of total damage or injury for a report to be taken. So, you know, a lot of people feel like they have to stay, in particular, like in an intersection. They've gotten into a minor fender bender or on the side of the road, somebody just taps them from behind, that they have to stay right there. They cannot move. My suggestion, if it doesn't meet the $1,500 or personal injury, to pull over the side. Obviously, it's treacherous as enough. We don't need people to add to it by clogging up the roadways. If they've slid off the road, you know, try to stay, be aware that if you've slid off, somebody else can slide off. And we've had that happen where one person slides off and then right behind them, they start to panic, they hit the brakes, and they slide right into them.
Yeah, I mean, that $1,500 mark, I mean, that's basically everything. Because you can't even bring your car into an auto shop, you know, and have it less than $1,500, no?
Yeah, and you're right. If we're talking if you dimple a fender, if you break a taillight, the $1,500 can add up very quickly. It's the person that slides off into a snowbank that doesn't damage really anything. There's typically going to be more on those days, more important calls to go after. So we just ask people some common sense, and if they feel like it doesn't meet it, don't call us. But absolutely, if it does meet that threshold, that's what we're there for.
Yeah, in China, they do it themselves. I mean, they can just look at the angle of the damage and know that it was this guy's fault, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, if it was from the front of the vehicle, that it was probably the driver's fault as opposed to the other driver.
And that's how we determine who's at fault as well. We can look at the crash pattern, the damage on the vehicles. If somebody's got damage from behind and somebody's got damage in the front, we're going to make an assumption that they got hit from behind. And the person that hit them, they're the ones that are at fault. Or an intersection, we have the ability to reconstruct an accident scene if need be.
Yeah. But again, that would, to stay there and wait for an officer to show up, I mean, you're going to have huge backups.
Absolutely. And then that's where we encourage people. If they feel like they can get out of the flow of traffic, we don't need them to stay exactly put where they are for us to complete our accident report. I would encourage them to take a photograph or two with their phone and then as quickly, as safely as possible, move off the side of the road and open up that intersection.
What if somebody accepts blame and then kind of reneges on that? I mean, do you need to get your phone out and have them have video testimony or something?
No, because ultimately, there's going to be a couple accident reports that are going to be taken. One is going to be initiated by law enforcement. So we will determine, based on the evidence at the scene, the crash pattern, the vehicle damage, who we believe the person's at fault. In addition to that, the insurance companies are always going to do their own independent accident investigation, primarily based on our information that we provide them. So, no, if somebody says, yeah, I ran the red light, I'm at fault, and then they renege, it doesn't change anything.
Okay. But again, you've got to have that. The cops have to be called.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. You have the authorization to hire 4 new deputies. When are you going to get them?
Well, we're starting the process right now. We had a few deputies that we were still trying to backfill from last year, and we've been able to recruit some very, very good deputies. We got one from Sandy City who had 18 years law enforcement, one from West Valley City with 8 years law enforcement, a retired sergeant from Unified Police. We've been able to attract and recruit some pretty talented individuals. So we're continuing that trend. We're still moving forward. So we are doing backgrounds right now. We're doing psychologicals and our polygraphs. And once those are completed, we should hopefully start bringing the 4 new deputies on board within the next month, 2 months.
So will these folks be commuters then? Are they going to relocate?
Well, there's one that lives up here in Summit County. He just recently moved up here with his wife. So I think we've got one that's going to be a local resident. And the other 3 look like they're going to be commuters.
Mm-hmm. Do we pay them enough money to live here?
We do not, no. That's just it's just pure economics that law enforcement, I think your teachers, your firefighters, This is a pretty expensive community, and a lot of people cannot afford to live up here. I mean, there's cheaper houses on the east side, but we're talking all the way up into Francis and Colville and Hennifer. That might not be conducive for if they have a spouse that works in the valley. So by and large, no, it's a lot harder to live in Summit County.
Okay, and finally, we're still seeing a bunch of smash and grabs. Do they follow the patroller's schedule? Do they kind of know when a cop's out and about? Or do you guys stagger those?
They're completely staggered. They're completely randomized. We do not have a schedule like on a shift board where Officer A has to be at a certain place at a certain time. Officer B has to be at a certain place at a certain time. We patrol at random, and the purpose behind that is because we don't want people to know our habits. And we don't have habits. We don't have patrol habits. It's completely randomized. So, no, they're not following us and know that, okay, we just had a deputy go through this strip mall. They're not coming back for 2 hours. So now we have free range. That's no.
No. Okay. No. Hey, anything else you want to tell us?
With all the traffic during Sundance, I would encourage people to use the park and rides, use the bus system. Coming in today, it was pretty backed up as early as I came in. So during Sundance, there's a lot of people in town. Please use those park and rides and the bus system.
Yeah. Did you have any law enforcement issues, though, as opposed to traffic?
Well, not related to traffic. We had a pursuit. We had a pursuit over the weekend that started off here in Park City on Main Street. Park City initiated the pursuit. We picked it up in the county, and then we ended up spiking the vehicle. The vehicle is trying to get away and ram other vehicles. More of a deadly use of deadly force situation. So we spiked the vehicle. We ended up pitting the vehicle down at about Lambs Canyon area, and we're able to take the individual into custody.
So what was he wanted for?
He had warrants, and he was DUI. He was DUI. So he was doing everything he could to get away.
All right. Nobody was hurt, though?
Nobody's hurt. Absolutely not. No, we were able to take him safely in custody. And then we had a situation, what they call swatting. We had a report of an individual who claimed that he had shot his wife with an AR-15. He was holding his kids hostage. And what it is, it's a hoax. It's a prank call. But they do this, and it's across the nation, and they call it swatting. In an attempt to disrupt services, SWAT teams get called out. We were able to do a phone track, and the track came back to California. The individual home where he said he was at, we were able to do a reverse 911, get a hold of the homeowner who was not home, said nobody is there. But, when we have that information, and dispatch said they even heard gunshots in the background. So, it raised our heightened awareness. We responded appropriately, but as we did the investigation and determined that the phone call was in California, the people weren't at home, we still cleared the residence, but it does, those type of situations do disturb our operational readiness.
So this, it was just being a jerk doing that? I mean, as opposed to trying to commit another crime while SWAT was
And then that's the other part of it. Some people are just being jerks. They like to see SWAT teams respond for no good reason. And then there's the other aspect where those individuals will disrupt our operational tempo and then commit other crimes because we are tied up on an incident. So we have to be very cautious into how we respond to situations like that.
Okay. All right, Sheriff. Thanks,
Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:31. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, the Park City Council meeting and work session tomorrow to look at the final design review for the second phase of Woodside Park. In the studio with details, I have City Manager Diane Foster along with Community Development Director Anne Laurent. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Anne, let's have you talk a little bit about this Woodside Park Phase 2. Staff recommending that council provide direction to proceed with the master plan development application so construction can begin this summer. Yeah, that fast?
So we've been working on the design for a while. This is a progress update to the City Council before we go to the Planning Commission because it is a city project. We want to check in and make sure they're in agreement with how the project's moving forward. It's not the first time the City Council's seen it, but it's at a very nice level of development where you can really look and see how this project's going to look and feel.
Okay, so what's being proposed?
What's being proposed is 60 units, and it's a combination of, it's mostly townhomes, smaller type units as well mixed in there. It's an idea of affordability, but then because we're looking at the pipeline and we're looking at the next project and how our funding that we're using for affordable housing works, we reinvest what we sell the units for into the next project. And so this one is going the first time that we've looked at mixing in 6 market rate units. So this is a new strategy.
Okay, so I mean, just quick math here. We're diverting sales tax revenue bonds, or we're approving sales tax revenue bonds to pay for this $22 million. Divide that by 60 units, we're talking about $370,000 a unit?
To construct, yes.
All right. So those would be sold for more than that?
Market rate would, but the affordable units we usually sell at a loss. So this is each time we invest in a project, we only recoup a certain percentage of the money we invested in the construction, and we roll that what's left into the next project. And these market units help us make some of the other units more affordable.
Okay. So the city is losing how much money then?
On this particular project, we will come back with the actual pricing. We have not set all the pricing yet. That's going to be a next step. The reason we had to take this early step before we had all those numbers together is because when we go through the Planning Commission, affordable housing and the market rate are looked differently in terms of density and what's allowed in the code. So we had to stipulate that that's the direction we're going.
So in terms of the sales tax revenues, I mean, how long does this project absorb the incoming sales taxes for? Taxes that can't be spent on fixing potholes and things
okay.
like that.
Right. So this is probably more of a Nate Rockwood question, but he sells bonds for the affordable housing project specifically, and we don't spend the money until we spend it, and then we try to sell them as quickly as we can to recoup that money.
So, I mean, is it a project, though, that goes on for 15 years, like we see a lot of bonds?
These are longer term bonds, mm-hmm. But we do, the bonding then goes into the next project. So our next projects are over in the Prospector area.
Okay.
It is important to note that these are very much planned projects, and filling potholes comes out of our general fund. And this is the part of the $40 million in capital, which City Council allocated about 3 years ago for affordable housing.
Everyone in the area, though, is having a hard time with construction costs being way over budget, finding even subcontractors. How's the city going to manage that?
Yes, so we've got Woodside Phase 1 under construction. We are very familiar. We also are doing some construction in Prospector area. And so far, we're just keeping track of the numbers and planning our future projects accordingly. But absolutely, we see the numbers getting tighter and tighter like everybody else.
Yeah, tighter, but I mean, like, 20-25% more than what was originally budgeted.
Right.
Have you seen some bids, though, that have come back for the second phase, or not yet?
No. So we won't be bidding this until we have our land use approvals.
And what if they come back that high? I mean, what do we do? Do we just move forward and just suck it up?
Well, so, you know, we only have what we bonded for, and so not necessarily. We would be back in front of City Council with some alternatives of what some strategies there.
Okay. When would these be finished if they started this summer?
It's going to be at least a year, more like 18 months. So it'll be constructing right through next season as well.
Okay. Meanwhile, a resident living in a house that the city acquired on Norfolk, which apparently is part of this second phase, he's going to get to stay in place during construction unless what happens? At least he's got a lease that goes through the end of the year.
Yeah, the lease right now goes through the end of the year, and it's at the current rate that he's paying. And we may be able to allow him to stay in there a little longer because that house will be renovated and resold at market rate to help fund the project. So it won't be impacted during construction.
Okay. Let's see. Bonanza Flat, an update there. The city installed fencing and gates this fall, directing the routes for Brighton Estates residents. How's that working?
You know, I think this is a story of there are some things that are great and there are some things that need improvement. What's great is that the winter safety route that was requested by Brighton Estates, that seems to be working really well, and it's signed and folks are using it. The downside of kind of what's going on up there is there are still a significant number of motorized users up there who are disregarding the postage signage. So we're in the process of adding video cameras up there and other things and working with Wasatch County on enforcement.
Yeah, but apparently even video cameras are getting taken down. I guess you had some installed for wildlife?
Yeah, we are having vandalism happen with both signage and equipment, so that's discouraging. And, you know, we appreciate our partnership with Brighton Estates, both Logan Jones and Heinrich Dieters continue to work with the snowmobiling community because that's one of the best ways is to go to the user communities and work with them.
So is this a city issue or is it an enforcement issue by Wasatch County?
You know, we take it as a city issue because it is the city's property. So we do take a lot of initiative on that piece of land. And again, thanks go out to Logan Jones and Heinrich Dieters for all the work they're doing up there and the time that they're spending up there. When it comes to the actual enforcement, we do turn it over to Wasatch County. We have proposed an interlocal agreement with Wasatch County on policing. That has not got through the Wasatch County Council yet, but we're hopeful. And Wasatch County Sheriff is very supportive of that agreement as well. That would actually give us even more authority up there.
Right, because otherwise they're going to have to come all the way around through Park City to get up to. I mean, we're
correct.
That much closer. So is that something that the agreement would say, is that city officials kind of deal with it during the winter months? Or?
Yeah, that agreement, and that was heard in public before the Wasatch County Council this fall. And the agreement basically would say that Park City will patrol up there. And we do have Officer Proctor is assigned to that area, and he does spend time up there. What it would do would give us a little bit more authority to enforce kind of misdemeanors, and then more serious offenses we would ask permission if we could enforce on the spot, and then it would be prosecuted by the Wasatch County Prosecutor.
So if this continues, I mean, people just disregarding the non-motorized sign, the vandalism, the theft continuing, I mean, is Brighton Estates at risk of losing that access that you're providing?
I don't believe so. I think what you'll see the city do is put more enforcement up there and more presence. You know, our team is doing everything they can right now. And I do want to say, we're not talking about the majority of users. We're talking about a small minority who have chosen to vandalize and to, you know, drive snowmobiles where they're prohibited. But in general, it is actually working quite well, particularly with the Brighton Estates community.
All right, and then this might be back to you, and we'll see continued conversation with regard to the Historic District Guidelines from January 15th. You'll be talking about steep slopes and lot sizes, I guess. I mean, have we figured this out at this point for council to make a decision?
We have, and we recognize that it was a lot of information to take in at one meeting, so we're going to take the questions and come back and respond to them. We do think we have good information to bring back, and we do think that it's a good opportunity for us to just look at the language and just make sure we're not sending a message that we're not trying to send.
Okay, there was some concern over homeowners' ability to make improvements or additions to their homes or even make them more sustainable. So that's all been...
That's correct. We're not trying to further limit, buildable areas on people's lots and when they want to make improvements. We're trying to clarify. And then from a sustainability perspective, absolutely. We are looking at making sure people are clear that they have lots of opportunities to make decisions to be more energy efficient with their homes.
Okay. Real quick, check in with regard to Sundance. How is it going, Diane, from your point of view?
Sundance is going great. We have emergency operations briefings every morning, and I've been out and about. I rode the bus in this morning from Richardson Flats, and it took about 35 minutes, and it was a smooth ride. So I think, in general, we are thankful for the weather. It always makes it a little bit easier. But as you've heard, we'll have crews out on some of the Old Town streets this morning continuing to haul snow out of town. But in general, I do want to send out my thanks both to the community for your patience when at the moments where we do have some traffic, and also to city staff who have done just an amazing job so far.
Yeah, I had one report from a couple traveling from the Colony trying to get up to Main Street. They got stuck in traffic 2 hours from the Colony to Main Street. That's crazy. And I guess it's just, how do we figure that out? Because if you get on a bus, you get stuck in traffic too.
Well, here's the good news. If you're going from the colony, you get on a bus, and you can use, the bus uses the breakdown lanes. And we have that agreement with UDOT, so you can actually get there more quickly on a bus than you can, particularly on SR-224. It's going to be faster on a bus than it is in a car.
Yeah, and I spent a lot of time just on foot and noticed some of the sidewalks just really in horrendous condition. You know, icy. Some hadn't even been plowed from a week ago. Just huge puddles, you know, at intersections where the snow or the water melting off hasn't been able to drain off. I mean, I got soaked when a car drove by and splashed me. So it seems like we do all of this for people getting on a bus, but those who try to walk, I mean, it just doesn't feel like the same amount of care has been put into that.
Actually, my experience has been a little bit different. You're absolutely right about intersections, and with the temperature swings we're seeing, we're going to have puddles in intersections, and boot sales typically go through the roof during Sundance in town. You know, I think the sidewalk, streets and sidewalks crew, even when they move it, they can't get every little piece of snow off, so they have been around with salt and things like that. And one improvement I saw this year is I walked from the high school to the Mark to go see a film, and they've actually plowed an area that there's not even a sidewalk, but they created a sidewalk that's separated from the road. So we do have two vehicles that are specifically plow sidewalks, and they continue to do work out there. But it is, it's not perfect. You got to have good footwear. I will say, though, because of the temps, we do see a lot of Sundance folks walking, and that's great to see.
Yeah, of course, World Championships coming up this Friday. Are we all ready for that?
We are absolutely all ready for that. The city has taken the perspective that we've got a 17 days of events rather than just 10 with Sundance, and the team is absolutely ready to go and is planning for really a pretty wide range of crowds.
And after this week's meeting, then we're back to Thursdays?
Then we're back to normal Thursdays, and we all, I think most of us have very much appreciated the trial on Tuesdays, which we did because there was a Colorado Association of Ski Town meetings and a couple conflicts, and of course with Sundance starting on a Thursday, we couldn't have a meeting that day. I think we all like Thursday meetings because when Friday hits, you have the weekend to look forward to.
Okay. Diane, Ann, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:46. Good morning. Well, the 2019 Freestyle and Freeski World Championships start on Friday in the studio with a rundown of what to look forward to. U.S. Ski Team spokesman Tom Webb, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. So day one, Friday, and that's going to kick off Solitude.
Yes, that's right. So months, years of preparation come to fruition starting Friday over at Solitude. We have snowball cross finals starting from 11 o'clock over there. Several people to keep an eye on, particularly Lindsay Jacobellis, who is the most successful female snowball cross athlete of all time. Also her teammate Nate Holland, who is one of the most dominant snowball cross athletes of his generation. So some strong US hopes there. And then we move straight on to day two. We have ski cross finals at Solitude from 1 p.m. And then we move over to Canyons. So the action that starts in Park City will kick off. We have opening ceremonies from 6 o'clock. And then we have the free ski Big Air final from 7 p.m. If you've never seen Big Air, go and watch it. It is absolutely outstanding. Breathtaking, quite frankly. The size of the tricks that they do is amazing. And then we have a band on called The Main Squeeze and some fireworks from 9 p.m. And then day three, we're back to Solitude for Team Snowball Cross Finals from 11 a.m. And that's the first time that's making its World Championship debut ahead of an Olympic debut in 2022. So we'll cover off more of what's going to come in the World Championships when I'm back on next week. But those are the opening 3 days, some fantastic action to look forward to and a lot of hard work that's gone in to get us ready for that.
Okay, so the Freeski Big Air can be accessed then from the base?
Yes, it can be. And I urge you, go and watch. It's going to be absolutely outstanding.
Okay, let's have a look at the last week in terms of Kelly Clark, of course, announcing her retirement.
Yeah, a sad day, but a good day. I think, you know, whenever somebody who has had that sort of positive impact on their sport announces retirement, obviously you want to look back and celebrate. Kelly, gold medalist on home soil, Salt Lake City 2002, and a real pioneer in the sport. Kelly is rightly revered, not only as a supreme athlete, but frankly as a supreme human being. Current phenom Chloe Kim, who obviously 2018 gold medalist, very, very honestly and openly talks about Kelly being her mentor and the person that she looks up to. And Kelly leaves such a positive impact on the sport. I've been lucky enough to spend a tiny little bit of time with her, and she's just one of those good people. So she'll be around the sport for a long time to come. But yeah, nearly 20 years on our team. She announced on Friday at X Games over in Aspen that she would be hanging up her competitive board. That's not to say she's hanging up her board at all, because she will continue to ride, and I'm sure will continue to inspire people for years to come.
Okay. Let's see. Alpine, some good news there from a local boy, Sam Duprat.
Yeah, Sam Duprat, a freshman on the University of Utah ski team, finished 29th, scoring his first ever World Cup points in Super G. That's over in Kitzbühel. Kitzbühel, arguably the Alpine event of the season. Tens of thousands of fans turning out to watch on one of those, one of the most amazing tracks in the Alpine World Cup season. So, yeah, really good for Sam, and we're all really stoked for him to have got those points. Also, Alice Merriweather, a young member of the team, she got her first top 10 place in 8th over in Garmisch in Germany. So a good weekend for the Alpine team, I think we're very pleased to see the progress that a lot of those young athletes are making, while Michaela Schifrin, obviously, as we've talked about a lot, continues to set records. But yeah, to see Alice, Sam and a few other folks out there doing some good work is very pleasing for the coaches and for the team overall.
Okay, but no other results then from the Hahnenkamm, huh?
A few others, but it was Bryce Bennett got himself into 14th place. He's having a really strong season. I think we talked before when I was last on about him knocking on that podium. Hahnenkamm, if you are saving up any money to go and ever watch an Alpine World Cup event, go and watch it over in Kitzbühel. That is quite something.
Okay, tell me about what happened here at the Italian Free Ski World Cup slopestyle.
Yeah, so a snowboard rookie team member Eileen Yu from San Francisco, she earned her first ever World Cup victory at the slopestyle event over in Italy. And then we had two local athletes, Marin Hamill and Rel Harwood, both from Park City, who finished 4th and 6th respectively over there. And then Kinnan Fagan finished 3rd in front of Colby Stevenson, who's another local boy, a US pro team member, in 4th. So a really, really strong weekend. Frankly, when I'm going through the kind of reports and seeing just how many podiums, how many successes we're seeing, it's kind of overwhelming. But we have so many athletes competing all around the world. But really good to see so many local athletes to Park City scoring such good results.
Okay, so the teams have been named in terms of who will be here?
No, not quite yet. We're saving that up. So that'll be the 29th. So we've still got a day or so to go before we give out those details. But I think we're pretty clear on kind of who's going to be in the team. But it'll all be officially announced on the 29th.
Okay. And then finally in cross country?
Yeah, cross country. A fantastic result, quite frankly. Junior men's team won the 4x5K relay at the Junior World Champs in Lahti in Finland. That is a very, very good step forward for those young men, and shows that the focus on development and the long-term plans that we got in place for the USA to be a really dominant force in cross-country, that graph continues to grow upwards in the right direction.
Okay, anything else?
Nope, that's it. Just watch out for the world champs and enjoy.
Okay, and we should mention that you'll be doing daily updates on the Local View with Randy Barton starting Friday?
Yes, I will be. Looking forward to giving everybody all the news and action from the world championships.
Okay, 4:45, is that what we've decided on?
That is right.
Okay, yes. Tom, thanks.
Thank you.
Tom Webb with U.S. Ski and Snowboard. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, there is a Summit County chapter of the Utah League of Riders in the studio to tell more about this riding group. I have the president of Silver Peak Riders, Laura Lee Pierce. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about the group. How long have you guys been around?
So we've been around for about 8 months. We were contacted probably 9 or 10 months ago by the president of the League of Utah Riders about possibility of starting a chapter out here in Park City. And we're hoping to expand and have people from Colville, Camas, and even as far as Heber.
So how many members do you have at this point?
You know, we have a little over 15 members right now, so still small enough to kind of tweak it and get everybody's opinion of what they would like to have this chapter represent and be. And
So it's
still
a membership.
Growing.
Yes, membership organization. So you pay dues, or how does that work?
So the way that we have it set up right now is that it's the Silver Peak Writers Group, our chapter meetings, they're free to the public. Whoever would like to come can come. And the Summit County Library has been great working with us, helping with advertising, as well as offering us a space where we can meet. However, we are associated with the League of Utah Writers, and they do have a yearly fee. It's $5 for students, $25 for everybody else, for adults who are not students. And you have your choice of whether or not you want to pay that and actually be a member of the League of Utah Writers, but we don't limit. We just are whoever would like to come. We want you to come and join us and have fun.
Okay. So how often do you meet?
We meet once a month, generally the last Tuesday of every month. And we have been meeting at the Kimball Junction Library in the room 133 down just kind of right next to the DMV, or if we have a presenter that draws a larger crowd, then we will meet in the auditorium. However, we are starting this new year trying something new to alternate between the Camas Library, the new Camas Library, and Kimball Junction Library to see if we can reach more writers and make it a little more accessible to those that live maybe out in the Colville or Heber area that don't want to drive all the way out to Park City.
Yeah. So what time do you guys meet?
Oh, sorry. 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And again, you mentioned any writer, fiction, nonfiction, welcome.
Anything.
To
yeah. We have any genre. If you like to write poetry, screenwriters, as we have Sundance going on right now, any screenwriters that would like to come join us, that would be fabulous. And we've have a couple of members that come and join us who write for magazines, sport column or travel column or whatever, just anybody who likes to write. And even if you don't have a desire to have anybody read your writing, maybe you don't want to publish or you just enjoy writing, we'd love to have you come out and join us as well.
Yeah, so what happens during the meeting then?
So we try to have either a mini workshop or a presentation. We try and bring someone in, whether it's a published author or if it's an agent or an editor, someone that can talk to us a little bit more about the craft of writing to just help us out. And then the last hour we generally spend, we either share our writing for those that want to share. Not everybody feels comfortable sharing, and that's fine. You don't have to share, but if you would like to share, you can. And we've done a little bit of critiquing. We don't do too much. It's mostly just sharing and talking about, this is what I'm working on, or this is what I'd like to work on. And we try to keep it very open and friendly and non-judgmental in any way, shape, or form. So anybody who would like to share can, and those that don't feel comfortable don't have to.
Tomorrow, I think, I don't know if Roger's a member or not, but Roger Barrows is giving a presentation. So what's he going to be talking about?
So he will be talking about his experience as a writer and his experience with publishing and presenting pretty much across the world. And he's internationally known as well. And so that will be really great for us to just have someone who's really been there and gone through the work and to talk to us a little bit about that whole process, the creative process of what it takes to get what's in from your head to the paper to someone to read it to a publisher. So we're really looking forward to that, to hearing him. And we did guerrilla warfare marketing, and we've had a publisher come and talk to us, and so it's been really fun to have the different genres represented and the different processes as well.
Okay. So tomorrow you'll be meeting at the Kimball Junction Library then?
Kimball Junction Auditorium from 6 to 8, and Roger will be presenting. And we're also doing it as a Q&A, so people can ask questions. And
okay. Now, you guys have a Facebook page or anything like that?
We
people
do.
People can follow along?
So Silver Peak Writers Facebook, and we're in the process of getting a calendar up on there as well so that people can get in and look and they can see what we're doing and when we're meeting and what we're presenting for that particular month. And then I also have an email for those that are interested. If they want to, they can email me and I can send out information. And I have, and then there's also the League of Utah Writers.com that they can jump on if they want to find out more information about that organization that we're associated with.
Okay. How do they get a hold of you?
Okay. So it's lp.silverpeakwriters@gmail.com.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell our listeners?
We would just love to have more members come and join us and get to meet more writers. We have a lot of fun, and anybody who's interested in presenting for us as well, they have something they'd like to come and present for our workshop or just to come and talk to us, and we'd love to have that as well. And they can contact me at that email.
Okay. Laura Lee, thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
That's Laura Lee Pierce again, president of the Silver Peak Writers Group. This is the Local News Hour on KPCW.